Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Reed's Wrestling. I am your host, Alan Reed, and I'll be reviewing the February 1st edition of Raw, the Raw after the Royal Rumble. So we're going to get right into it. So the night starts off with Drew McIntyre in the ring. And first off, I want to say, I kind of feel like Drew McIntyre isn't going to be champion for much longer. Maybe they're going to keep him to WrestleMania and then loses or not. Kind of feels like is kind of losing momentum in a way, and I'll get more into that later. So then Drew starts saying that we're officially on the road to WrestleMania. Thank God, it's my favorite time of the year, and I wish these 3 months would just last forever, because I think it's one of the most funnest, hyped up moments in WWE every year. So then he goes on to say, to basically say his own review about the Royal Rumble and all the winners or the losers, who's going to WrestleMania, who's not going to WrestleMania. And he starts saying how him and Goldberg beat the crap out of each other. That part was questionable because, I mean, the only oh my god moment of the match was Goldberg spearing Drew McIntyre through the barricade. But other than that, it wasn't really much of a, you know, of a quote unquote brawl, to say the least. So then Edge comes out, and when you see Edge walking down the entrance ramp, he's limping, and I mean, I'm pretty sure he's sore and tired from last night, because I mean, the poor guy lasted almost an hour in the ring. So I mean, I don't really blame him for feeling tired or sore. So then Drew goes on to thank Edge for everything he did when Drew McIntyre came to America, when Drew McIntyre didn't know anyone. And then Edge basically took him in and was one of the first people he talked to. And then Edge appreciates the compliments, but then Edge quickly says, "What's wrong with you?" Because Drew McIntyre is being way too nice to him. And Edge just won the Royal Rumble and Drew McIntyre's champion. So Drew McIntyre should be thinking of ways to just trick Edge and then just, you know, turn on him. Because clearly that's what Edge stated, because when he said when Edge was champion, he was not like this. He had eyes behind his head. He was keeping a close call on everyone. So with Drew being too nice, Edge actually, I guess, took it the wrong way. So then Sheamus comes out and starts to tell Edge that he shouldn't question Drew McIntyre's generosity. And he continued to say that Drew has been carrying the WWE on his back this whole time while Edge was home with his injury. I think that is true. Drew has been carrying the WWE since Edge has been injured. And I mean, he's been carrying it really well. He's been trying his best. I mean, he does deserve it with everything he's been through. So I will say Sheamus is right in that part. And then Edge starts to tease Drew McIntyre about making his decision on who he wants to wrestle at WrestleMania. Is he going to pick Roman Reigns? Is he going to pick Drew McIntyre? But Edge told Drew straight up, "You will know who I pick. You will know when he makes his decision." So my guess was that Edge was going to go against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. No doubt about that. That was my pick after I saw the Royal Rumble. But now with Edge coming out and doing his promo on Drew, my decision is a little blurry. So I can kind of see Drew McIntyre kind of going against Edge and making a whole, "Hey, I looked up to you when I came here" angle type thing. So I can see that happening. As far as Sheamus coming out, I feel like it was just pretty pointless. It was kind of like, you know, like a friend standing up for another friend but like it shouldn't have happened, because it kind of seemed like Drew had a little bit of fear in him. Not fear, but like doubt in him. And that doubt kind of made him look weak. It's like, "Hey, I need someone else to come out and kind of say the things I want to say, but I don't want to say the things that the other person said, because this is Edge, and Edge is like the guy I looked up to." So kind of feel pointless at that, making Drew kind of seem a little doubtful. So then Sheamus bro kicks Drew. I mean, so much for that friendship, really. And I'm guessing this will be another heel run for Sheamus. I'm okay with that. Sheamus, I think, is boring to play a heel. Every time he's a babyface, I mean, it's cool. But Sheamus is a heel. I mean, he is born to play a heel. So then They interview Sheamus backstage, and Sheamus says that everyone just knows him as Drew McIntyre's friend, and he's tired of it. No more. He wants the WWE Championship. So then the first match of the night is Riddle versus Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship. This one's a very straightforward, in-your-face type match. Nothing crazy happened. Riddle went for quick attacks. He tried not to give Lashley any offense, but of course, Lashley, with his intense strength, he starts to take over the match before Riddle just throws him out of the ring. And from there, everything just went downhill for Riddle. Lashley puts a hurt lock on Riddle on the ropes. He doesn't let go at all, causing a 5 count from the referee, and then it's a disqualification. Riddle wins the match, but Lashley retains the title because you can't win the title on disqualification. So then Lashley just keeps an assault on Riddle. He keeps putting the hurt lock on him, tossing him to the barricade. Lashley gave no shit about this match. You can just tell from the get-go. He just wants to get in, get out. He doesn't care whether he won by disqualification or lost by disqualification. He just wants to walk out still as United States champion. And like I said, it was a waste of a championship match. Nothing crazy happened. It was a very fast match. I mean, I guess they're just going to keep this rivalry going for, I don't know, until WrestleMania, I would say. So then we go to backstage, and a Bugatti pulls in, a white Bugatti. And then Bad Bunny comes out. And from there on, I'm like, wow, these WWE is really going to milk the hell out of this whole Bad Bunny, Miz, and Morrison thing. I mean, God knows how far they're going to take that one. So then after a short commercial, we go back to ringside, and Riddle is still outside the ring, and there's a medical staff around him, and he just looks lost and dazed, doesn't remember anything. He keeps telling the medical staff what happened. I mean, I guess when Lashley tossed him over the barricade after doing a hurt lock, he bumped his head on the concrete. So then we move on to another backstage segment. This one's with Randy Orton, and Randy Orton is completely pissed off that Edge did come back and that he did win the Royal Rumble. And he states that Edge basically made him look like a liar because Randy Orton promised that Edge would not come back at all, and that he did what he did to Edge because Randy Orton loves him so much and he wants him to be a better father and husband, so he should stay home. I mean, I guess it's real bro love when your friend hits you in the head with a chair or a ladder and you have to stay home with your family, right? Because that's real friendship. And then Orton goes on to say that there won't be a WrestleMania main event when he's done with Edge. So from there, I'm like, man, what more can Randy Orton do to Edge to quote unquote end his WrestleMania run? Because I don't even know what more they can do. I mean, unless you literally break Edge's neck, which, come on, let's not do that. So then we move on to Xavier Woods versus Mustafa Ali. And this is the funny thing about Xavier Woods now. I feel like Xavier Woods and Ricochet have something in common. Both of them are going against every single Retribution member, right? So it's basically the same thing. So Ricochet went against every Retribution member, and Mustafa Ali wanted to recruit him, but he kept saying no. So now they're going against Xavier Woods. He's going against every single Retribution member, and maybe they're slowly trying to get Xavier Woods to join Retribution. I don't see that happening, but I mean, they did draft Big E to SmackDown, so the New Day is kind of, in a way, it's half of the New Day, so I guess they might be slowly teasing a breakup, but I really hope not, because New Day, as long as they've been here for like a decade or whatever, they're pretty fun to watch, so I really hope that they don't break up the New Day like that and make Xavier Woods go into the whole, hey, I'm a heel now, because I can't see Xavier Woods as a heel. And also, when Retribution was walking down the ramp, Mace was nowhere to be found, and I just had a thought. I was like, oh wow, like usually every Retribution member comes out, whether it's a tag team match or singles match or whatever, but Mace didn't come out. So I don't know, just a random thought. Found it to be odd because he's usually there, but it is what it is. So then with this whole Xavier Woods and Retribution thing, I feel like it's leading up to a Mustafa Ali versus Kofi Kingston match. I can see that being a WrestleMania match with a stipulation being if Mustafa Ali wins, then Xavier Woods has to join Retribution. Or if Kofi Kingston wins, obviously he stays in New Day, because this whole feud is literally circling around Kofi at this point. Mustafa Ali supposedly is jealous of Kofi because Kofi stole Mustafa Ali's chance at WrestleMania, so Kofi Mania should have been Ali Mania. So then the match, it was fair. Mustafa Ali has most of the control of the match. He does multiple net breakers to Woods, and he kept talking shit to Kofi the whole time. He, with every move that Mustafa Ali said, he kept telling Kofi, "Watch this, watch this, watch this." And then Ali sells a clothesline. Xavier gives Ali a clothesline, and then Ali does a backflip and falls like he's dead. I mean, I love when wrestlers do that whole like dramatic sell. I mean, it makes me laugh. It's a joy. So then Kofi launches himself to slapjack. Xavier Woods rolls Ali over. Xavier Woods gets the win. Now, interesting enough, which I had this thought in my head. Every time a Retribution member loses a match, Mustafa Ali gets super pissed off at them, slaps them around, whatever. But then when Ali loses a match, none of the members of Retribution give Mustafa Ali shit. I mean, I know that, you know, Mustafa Ali is your leader and you can do that, I guess. But I mean, come on, man. Like, I feel like Slapjack, T-Bar, and Maze need to grow balls and just... Every time Ali loses, it'd be like, yo, what the fuck? Bro, you're supposed to be our leader. You're supposed to be setting examples for us. And here you're losing, but we don't give you shit. But then you give us shit when we lose a match when it's not even our fault sometimes. So I strongly started thinking about that. So then we move on to Bad Bunny and Damian Priest backstage. And Damian's talking some sort of strategy to Bad Bunny. And this is where I kind of got surprised, because Damian Priest talks Spanish. I didn't know that. So then I googled it, and it turns out that Damian Priest is Puerto Rican. So I was like, oh wow, like I did not know that. I read or saw that he's from New York, but for some reason I just thought he was just, you know, not Latino. So I think it was pretty cool. I was like, oh wow, he's Puerto Rican, of course, and it all makes sense now. And from there, and I was like, oh, so does that mean Damian Priest left NXT and now he's on Raw? Don't get me wrong, I think that's cool. I think Damian Priest is the coolest fucking guy right now. So then we move on to Miz TV, and this one was right on the nose. You knew what was going to happen. You knew who the guest was going to be. You know what they were going to say. But it's a joy seeing Miz and Morrison do their whole segment, because Miz just makes me laugh. And then, of course, clearly this feud is going to keep going, like I said earlier. They're going to milk the hell out of this Bad Bunny Miz thing for God knows how long. Because, I mean, remember, they need some sort of celebrity endorsement for WrestleMania, as they do every year since last year. They had no celebrity endorsement. This year, Bad Bunny is carrying that on his back. So I'm actually curious to see, like, what they're going to keep doing. So the Miz introduces Bad Bunny to the ring. And then they replay what happened at the Rumble, with Miz and Morrison getting eliminated by Damian Priest. And then Bad Bunny jumping off the turnbuckle to Miz and Morrison with that botched dive when you see his leg slip. I think that was funny. Hey, but I mean, hey, better him, man. I wish I had the chance to dive onto the WWE superstar. So I think it was cool. So then Miz issues an apology to Bad Bunny, saying that he's sorry for the way he acted. Was it a modest apology? Probably not. I think Bad Bunny just saw through his sarcasm like from the get-go. So that's why Bad Bunny was like, okay, don't worry. So it was very plain. So then The Miz says, hey, do you have anything to say to us? Bad Bunny just says, no. And then Miz goes on a rant saying how everyone under his wing has turned into WWE superstars and champions. He uses Daniel Bryan as an example, saying that Daniel Bryan was a quote-unquote B-plus player before he found him, and then Miz made him into the whole WrestleMania main event, into one of the faces of WWE and into WWE champion. I believe that's not true, but I mean, hey, he wants to take credit for that, more power to him. So then the whole reason why Miz and Morrison invited Bad Bunny to Miz TV was because Miz and Morrison want to record an album with him. Yes, Miz and Morrison want to record an album with Bad Bunny. And then Morrison freestyles and he goes into a Spanish rap and it's terrible. He just starts rhyming every single Spanish word he knows and it's all over the place. So then Bad Bunny declines the offer again, and then Mrs. Morrison gave him more piss. Like, hello, that's two no's in 2 days. Like, what the fuck, bro? So then Bad Bunny says, like, the only reason he came to Miss TV is because his good friend wants to be a Miss TV. And then out comes Damian Priest. And Damian Priest, you know, high five Bad Bunny and then just literally knocks out the Miz. So then we move on to Damian Priest versus the Miz. So this is Damian Priest's Raw debut, and it's about damn time. This guy should have been a Raw a long time ago, because I saw him in NXT. I thought he was a cool thing. That guy oozes coolness. He's good in the ring. He's a martial artist. That guy is badass. But with him being on Raw, I mean, it's not official yet. They technically did say like NXT superstar still. But if he is officially on Raw, I really hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle with all these big superstars that have been there longer than him, and they take his spotlight. Kind of hope they do give him a push to at least Intercontinental Championship match or like a United States Championship match to get him started. So then with every move that Miz does on Priest, Miz mocks Bad Bunny because Bad Bunny's sitting on ringside, and it kind of looked like he was just thinking of like, okay, what do I do next, you know? So then Priest does a broken arrow to Miz. He goes for a pin. The Miz kicks out. And then the Miz tries to grab the briefcase from the corner. Bad Bunny interferes and takes it away from him. And then Miz comes and confronts Bad Bunny and asks him, hey, can you give me the briefcase? And Bad Bunny's like, okay, yeah, I'll give you the briefcase. He gives him the briefcase, but then Bad Bunny slaps Morrison's face with a microphone. From the camera angle that they put, it kind of felt like a botch, because it kind of showed like the mic kind of went a little further than where it would go if it hits a face. But that's just me. Maybe I was just like maybe over analyzing that this point. So that Damian Priest does a reckoning on the Miz and he wins his Raw debut. Hopefully they really do push Damian Priest, because this guy really deserves it. So then we move on to Lucha House Party versus Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander for the Tag Team Championship. I love seeing Lucha House Party wrestle, because they just bring in that whole AAA Lucha Libre style wrestling that WWE has been lacking for some time. So it's always a joy seeing them. And then I was watching Cedric Alexander during the match, and he convinced me that obviously he's trying to outdo Shelton Benjamin, but I think he's doing it a little too much, that he's focusing so much on trying to outdo what Shelton is doing instead of focusing on what's happening in the ring, which is what causes him to always lose his offense, because his every move he just does this ecstatic, like, oh yeah, you know, like stuff like that. So I feel like he should be focusing more on the ring than what Shelton is thinking in the corner. So then the match, it's a fairly simple tag team match. You know, Dorado does a DDT to Shelton, and at this point Dorado has been in the match for a while, and this DDT gives him a moment of a breather, because he's trying to go tag to Grand Metal League. Grand Metal League gets a tag, and before I keep going, I think Grand Metal League is this generation's Rey Mysterio, I swear, because this guy is like always in the air or he's on the ropes. He's always doing something cool in Lucha Libre style. So I wish they would kind of make him into this generation's Rey Mysterio, because I can see it. Like, they will have to break up the Lucha House Party. But I mean, at this point, they're not really doing anything. They're just almost like tag team jobbers, because they basically almost lose every match. If they win a match, it's every once in a blue moon. So I feel like they should give Grand Metal League a little singles push and make him into this generation's Rey Mysterio. So then we're Grand Metal League. It's Grand Metal League and Shelton Benjamin. Grand Metal League and Cedric Alexander. And Cedric goes to the corner, to his corner, and then Shelton tags himself in. But at that same time, Cedric was on fire, because he just slammed the hell out of Grand Metal League. And then when Shelton tags himself in, Cedric's expression just like goes like, yo, what the fuck? I have this. So then the Hurt Business retains their belt, of course. And then, of course, there is more misunderstanding with Shelton and Cedric. At this point, I don't even know if they're going to break up the Hurt Business or if this is just some inner thing. Are they going to do some like, hey, you guys are pissed off at each other, so let's have a singles match, take all your aggression out, and then we can all talk. Maybe they should do that, to be honest, because I feel like they have so much, like, you know, quote unquote, like dislike for each other that they have to get it out of the system. So why not just have them do a singles match, get it out of the system, and after a singles match, they show them backstage having a talk, and I guess they might cool down and they have everything out. So then that way they can return to be the Hurt Business, because like I've said before, the Hurt Business is one of the best factions right now, and they just need to keep them together. So then we move on to a triple threat tag team match. Charlotte Flair and Asuka versus Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose versus Lana and Naomi. And the winner will get a women's tag team match in the future. So then Charlotte and Naomi start the match. And Charlotte and Naomi, they start showing their athleticism from the start. They both do drop kicks. They both do like the push-up, the jump-up thing. And they fly around the ring. These two, again, great athletes. And then another thing is, every time now I'm looking at Lana, and I feel like her performance, her in-ring performances, are starting to get better. They're really growing on me. I feel like she's actually training and she wants to be taking more serious as a wrestler instead of just being another pretty face that WWE presents you. So that's good on her that she's actually trying to better herself and be a natural wrestler instead of being, hey, I'm going to be a valet for this person, or I'm going to just be on the mic and try to do the best promo I can. No, she's improving, and good on her. So then Dana does her signature flip to elbow on the corner, but Charlotte blocks it and slams Dana down. And then at this point, Charlotte has been in the match for the whole match basically so far, and Asuka has been literally just a cheerleader in the corner. And then when she finally tags Asuka, I was like, literally like, okay, Charlotte has been in this match for like almost like 7-8 minutes, and Asuka is just there being a cheerleader. So I didn't get it. But then again, Asuka didn't really attempt a tag, really. She was just looking and walking back and forth in the corner, so nothing happened. So then as Asuka is in, Lana tags herself in, so we basically get like 2-3 minutes of Asuka in the ring. Okay, whatever floats their boat, I guess. And then Lana, and then there's a massive kick to the face of Charlotte, which I felt that kick snapped. Now everyone gets in the ring and knocks each other out with different finishers. It all piles in, all hell breaks loose. And then of course, Ric Flair and Lacey Evans comes out for the distraction. Charlotte gets completely distracted. She comes out the ring. She's looking at Lacey Evans and Ric Flair. Naomi does a rear view on. I'm sorry, Naomi. Naomi and Lana win. So this tag team is a number one contender now. Personally, I feel like Asuka should have just pinned Naomi right there, but Naomi comes in, rear view on Asuka, and then Naomi and Lana win. So that's an interesting tag team, Naomi and Lana. I mean, it's the Total Divas tag team, you know, just saying. Well, what I feel is this whole Ric Flair distraction is starting to take a toll on Asuka. She's getting pissed off and annoyed that every time they wrestle, it's like she knows they're going to lose because Ric Flair is going to come out and Charlotte is going to lose focus and is going to go straight to her father instead of just annoying him and finishing the match. So I see Asuka and Charlotte breaking up very, very soon. Even I wouldn't even be surprised if by next Monday they were to kind of implode, and you know, Asuka's just be like, hey, you got to focus on your family issues and I'm going to focus on me becoming champion, and they just split up. I can see that happening very quickly right now. So then we move on to a Drew McIntyre interview, and Drew McIntyre is completely broken right now. He just looks like sad and down. Charlie Caruso asks him how he's feeling after Sheamus attacked him, and he doesn't know how to feel. Like, what happened? My best friend just kicked me in the face, but supposedly you're my best friend, but you care more about a title than friendship. So he doesn't understand that. And Drew says, If Sheamus is willing to throw away 20 year of friendship for a damn title, he got it. So he's gonna give Sheamus a title match, and I feel like Drew is tired. I mean, Drew is broken. He looked broken. He looked sad. His heart is ripped out. Like, hey, like, my best friend just almost killed me for a belt. Like, what else would he do for a belt? Imagine. So then we move on to Elias and Jackson Ryker versus Carlito and Jeff Hardy. Yes, Carlito. He actually made a return to Raw. In-ring return to Raw. But before I continue with results, this whole feud with Elias and Jeff Hardy is going on for way too long. Way too long. This should have literally ended at the Symphony of Destruction match. I don't know what they're trying to tell here as a story. Like, I like long-term storytelling, but it's like The Fiend and Orton and with Alexa. I mean, at least they're keeping it interesting with every week something happens that we know something's going to happen, but we just don't know what is going to happen. But with Elias and Jeff Hardy, we just, every week it's like, okay, they're going to wrestle one-on-one, or it's going to be Ryker versus Hardy, or it's going to be Elias versus Hardy, but then Ryker interferes. So they're just doing nothing to keep us entertained with this feud that should not be going on. And as a little pinpoint, Carlito, when he was wrestling, he has not lost a step. This guy looked fresh. This guy looked like he never left the ring. And dare I say, he looked pretty cool. So then the match itself, like I said, it was a bore. Nothing happened. Carlito does a back statement. Jeff Hardy swantons bombs on Ryker. Carlito and Jeff Hardy win. I'm gonna lie, and during the match, Carlito and Jeff Hardy, they had good chemistry. That is kind of cool to see that sort of like old school chemistry happening between these two. I kind of wish Carlito would spit in someone's face, you know, with the apple. I really missed that. I thought he was gonna do it at the Rumble, but he didn't do it. But hopefully, maybe he does another appearance next weekend. He spits in the face of people who don't like to be cool. So then we go to a backstage again. It's a lot of backstage segments today for some reason. And it's Edge. And Edge vows to leave Randy Orton behind after their match on Monday Night Raw. Edge, Randy Orton is going to be old news. And this rivalry is going to come to an end. Closure. I'm not gonna lie, I do believe him, but every time Edge, now at least, when he cuts the promo, his eyes go super wide, and I love it because it looks like he's entering some trance, as if like he's like literally talking to us, and I love that. I mean, he sells it so good, and his promos, and those eyes, bro. I mean, it's like to say, eyes are the gateway to the soul, and like it almost looks like they're gonna pop out, and it's like, whoa, okay, bro, this shit is getting serious now. So then we move on to Alexa Bliss versus Nikki Cross. I'm always looking forward to seeing Alexa and seeing what craziness, what theatric she's gonna do every night, every week now. Like, I'm always excited to see it. So then the match starts with Nikki telling Alexa what she wants from her. They used to be best friends. This is not you. I'm trying to save you. And then Alexa is like, you know, she's like that little girl on the playground, you know. Where every time she's in the ring, she gets into an arm bar. You get her into an arm bar, she laughs. You get her into a headlock, she laughs. You slam her in the ring, she starts laughing. It's almost like a little girl having fun. And it's like if you were to hit her with a chair, she'll just be laughing. Like, oh my God, this is so fun. You hit me in the head with a chair. Wow. Like, it's almost like joyful to watch in a way, because it's so weird. But then, yeah, you know. And then Alexa being that little girl that she is, apparently, she hopscotches and then kicks Nikki. That was actually very good. Like, as very, very into character. And then, out of nowhere, the goddess Alexa Bliss pops out of nowhere in the corner. Nikki just stares on, confused and freak out. Again, I'm loving these random character turns and every match that Alexa is doing, because it's almost becoming is becoming a staple in her character, but I really hope that they don't do it too much, too often, because then we're gonna get so used to it that what if she doesn't do it one night, and then us fans are gonna be like, oh, what the hell, there was no Goddess Alexa or Firefly House Alexa, like, what the fuck, you know? So I kind of hope that they kind of like, hey, we're gonna keep doing it, but not every night, so don't get too used to it, you know? So then Goddess Alexa, you know, wrestles Nikki around the ring, and then Alexa turns back into little girl Alexa Bliss. And now Nikki is not, she's not even scared or anything. She's literally pissed off and mad because it's like, dude, what the fuck is happening? And then Alexa does a Sister Abigail on Nikki. She wins the match. But this Sister Abigail is different. Alexa put on her own little twist. No pun intended. And Sister Abigail, the Fiend's hand is always in front of the person's face and neck and pulls it down. Alexa puts it in the back of the opponent's neck and then you know, slams her on the ground. I think that's pretty cool. To be honest, she put her own little, again, no pun intended, twist into the match. As you know, she's not going to be compared, you know, every time she does the move, it's not going to be that much compared to the Fiend doing Sister Abigail. So then Randy Orton's music comes in and he starts coming down the ramp, and Alexa comes to him, stands next to him, just stares at him. But he feels her. He has his eyes closed. He feels her presence. He knows she's there, but he ignores her and just walks to the ring. So then we go to the main event of the night. It's Edge versus Randy Orton. Edge starts the match off very, very good. He does very heavy blows, does go for quick pin. He's doing like, you know, like a Lashley thing, like, hey, get in, get out. That's it. I don't care. So then Randy Orton stomps Edge on the ribs, and then he puts his whole weight on Edge's ribs, and that shit hurt. I felt that one. That one looked like it hurt. Then Edge gets Randy Orton at execution, goes for a pin. Randy Orton kicks out. From this point on, it was maybe at least like 8 minutes, 9 minutes into that match, and Edge looked really winded. Like, actually, he looked like he couldn't breathe. Like, he was really tired. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's if that's him still being tired from the Rumble, being in there for 60 minutes, or if that's his body telling him, like, hey, like, I know you want to do this, but hey, I don't think we can do so much right now. So it was kind of scary seeing how winded he looked. At least on my part, it looked like he was like really like struggling to breathe. So then both men go on top of the turnbuckle. They start punching each other, and Randy goes down. Edge drops Randy with a flying clothesline, and Edge does a second execution, goes for the pin. Randy kicks out again. So now with this match, we're literally maybe in 13 minutes of the match, and Edge looks even more tired. He looks like his head is like throbbing. It looks like his eyes were kind of lost. I don't know if that's like maybe part of his character being, you know, crazy eyes, but it just looked like he had a blank stare and he kept breathing hard. So again, I mean, I don't know if it's just part of his character or if it's something more. So then Edge bumps Randy and sends Randy to the barricade. Randy sends Edge spine first to the announce table, a little payback for what Edge did to Randy Orton at the Rumble. So then Randy does what I call it, the rope side DDT, and he gains his confidence back because Edge is down. Oh, Randy got his confident again. He starts banging his hands on the mat, getting ready for an RKO, and then out of nowhere, creepy music starts to play. Very creepy music. I was kind of like, oh shit. So then the camera zooms out and we see Alexa Bliss sitting on top of a turnbuckle, right? And she's just staring at Randy Orton, and out of nowhere, blood just starts dripping out of her mouth. Yes, blood is dripping out of her mouth in this PG era. And then Randy Orton turns around, Edge spears Randy, Edge wins the match. Is the feud over? I don't think so. I feel like that's not the way Orton wants to go out. But we'll see. I feel like the Edge and Randy should not be like the Jeff Hardy and Elias feud, making it go too far. But hey, maybe this one will be more interesting than the Elias and Jeff Hardy. My final thoughts on this on the first episode of the Road to WrestleMania of Raw. It was a very slow Raw. It wasn't anything, no feuds were really that pushed forward. Not much of a surprise. It was a really slow burn, sadly. But I mean, we are on the road to WrestleMania, so they're not gonna give everything right now. They're gonna slowly build it up. I'm pretty sure by like the March, before the month before WrestleMania, we'll start getting more and more action, and hopefully way more surprises happening. What's my highlight for the night? Alexa Bliss. This chick is doing her best every week. She's literally, ever since I started doing this podcast, every Monday night, she is my highlight, because she is selling it, everything, so well. I mean, come on, you're sitting on a turnbuckle and that blood comes out of nowhere from your mouth. I mean, that is great, especially now with this whole PG era thing. I mean, hey, is it too scary for my kid to watch? Maybe, sure, but fuck it, bro. We need some adult content in wrestling right now. We can't keep it all superhero and supervillain. Like, hey, superhero's gonna win. Stuff. No. So my highlight is always, right, so far, has been Alexa Bliss every week. What's my rating for Raw? I get a 6 out of 10. Again, slow burn. It's the first episode of the Royal Rumble. We're in full swing to the road to WrestleMania. So I'm pretty, I'm not gonna lie, even though it was a slow run, I'm pretty excited to see what's gonna keep happening with everything that's going on, and who's Edge going to pick. Is it gonna be a twist in this? Are they gonna keep Orton and the Fiend feud going on to WrestleMania? I don't know. We're gonna see how everything unfolds. And that's it for this episode of Raw Review for the February 1st edition of Raw, the Raw the Raw after the Royal Rumble. Sorry. Thank you for listening, and you can always follow me at Instagram at Allen Rules Dude. That's AllenRulesDood, and on Instagram, on Twitter, on Allen Rocks 2224. That's Allen, AllenRocks, and the number's 2224. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.